What is going on, everybody? Jamie Shaw here on the Absolute Basketball Podcast. Very excited today. Head coach of Wake Forest, Steve Forbes, is on the show with us. We go through his tenure as a coach. We go through his time. We go through his time transitioning into being Wake Forest head coach and what he's looking forward to in the future, how he's going about recruitment, how he's building the roster, what their identity is looking to be, and all that type of fun stuff. It's a very good interview. Very excited about peeling back the layers and letting you guys listen to Steve Forbes and what his visions are as well. Before we get into it, ask the normal, if you would please go ahead and subscribe to this podcast. If you would, rate it 5 stars and leave a comment in the comment section below about what you enjoyed most about Steve Forbes and what you enjoyed most about what he says and his vision and all that kind of stuff. Please rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast. That would be awesome. But without further ado, here is Wake Forest head coach Steve Forbes on the Absolute Basketball Podcast with Jamie Shaw. Thank you guys very much. What's going on, everybody? Jamie Shaw here on the Absolute Basketball Podcast. I am joined by Wake Forest head coach Steve Forbes today. Steve, how's it going?
Jamie, man, thanks for having me. Good to see you. It's going good for the circumstances that we are in right now, you know, with the pandemic and then the civil unrest, you know, going on all across our country. You know, it's a trying times, to say the least.
No doubt. So first questions first, how does a young boy from Coventry, Iowa, population less than 1,500, who played baseball at Southern Arkansas, get into coaching basketball?
I loved it. You know, I played 4 sports in high school, Jamie, because I went to a school that you could do that. And actually, baseball was in the summer. The high school baseball played in the summer because it's kind of cold there, obviously, in the spring. And so you could do, you know, football, basketball, track in the spring, and then baseball. But I always loved basketball. I grew up at a time in Iowa when Lute Olson was the head coach of the Iowa Hawkeyes. And I grew up about 10 minutes from Iowa City, Iowa. Mm-hmm. And in 1980, Iowa went to the Final Four. And, you know, I just kind of got sucked into it. And I loved to play. I played in college. I played both baseball and basketball. But I always had this passion to really want to coach the game of basketball because I always loved it. And I always kind of understood the game, I felt like, you know, and that's kind of what led me to it.
And then you cut your teeth in JUCO starting at 89 to 98, Southwestern Community College, Barton Community College. How did spending those early years in JUCO help your voice, help you describe your voice as a head coach?
Well, it made me who I am for a lot of reasons. Number one, in JUCO, you got to do it all, Jamie. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have a staff. You don't have a, you know, video coordinator. You don't have a trainer. You don't have a secretary. You know, you don't have a director of basketball ops. You don't have any of that. And so you have to wear all the hats, you know, and so you learn how to do a lot of things. And but the most important thing you learn how to do is recruit because you don't have any rules as far as like recruiting periods, as far as when you can be out. You could be out every day if you want to be out. Yeah. And so I was out a lot, you know, learning how to recruit. And I figured out the better players made a better coach. I figured out that better players brought college Division I coaches to your gym. Mm-hmm. And with that, then I learned even more about what it was like to listen to those guys recruit when they came to recruit my players, you know. And so it was it's an educational process. Honestly, Jamie, I wouldn't trade for anything because I think sometimes what happens, and it's no disrespect to these administrative jobs at the Division I level, but you don't get a recruit, man. You know, you don't get out. I learned how to recruit without, and don't take offense to this, but no scouting service, no internet, right? So I had to learn how to do it with my eyes, and I trust my eyes. You know what I mean? And I always like to say that I'm from Iowa, but I like to say I'm from the Show Me State. Mm-hmm. You know, show me what you got.
Yeah.
You know, and so it was a different time, you know, but I wouldn't trade it for anything.
And I think that's a lost art in college these days. Coaches actually trusting their eyes. I think you're seeing people go more and more away from that as well.
Well, I think what happens is they look at rankings, you know, and I think a lot of it has to do with fans. Mm-hmm. Like you're trying to please your fan base because they're reading all this information and you know, but sometimes those stars don't always align, you know, and you know, you've heard me say this. I mean, I like Burger King all Mary's, so I'm gonna kick McDonald's ass, you know. I mean, it doesn't matter once you get in college. I mean, those McDonald's guys are usually great players. Don't get me wrong. I mean, there's very few guys that don't end up being great players, but there's a lot of other really good players out there too. You just have to have confidence in what you're looking for and have an eye for what you're looking for.
Then your next three stops are Idaho, Louisiana Tech, and Illinois State before jumping on getting your first high major assistant job with Billy Gillespie at Texas A&M. What was your time like? What was your experience like in College Station?
You know, I learned how to coach. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it's no disrespect to the guys that I worked with before that, but I really, truly, Jamie, learned how to coach basketball with Billy. He's one of the best coaches I've ever been around, especially defensively. He really keeps the game very simple, like I pretty much – I think we do. And it's all about identity with him. And that's what I'm going to bring here is identity. And so I really, truthfully, me and then Buzz Williams was on the staff at the same time, Alvin Brooks, Jarence Howard. You know, we had some talented people there. But really, truthfully, just I really, really learned how to coach. And then turning around on a program. You know, we inherited a program that was didn't win a game in the Big 12 the year before, and we won eight. And then we went to the NIT that year and almost got to the Final Four. And then the following year, we went to the NCAA tournament, you know, and beat Syracuse and lost on a buzzer beater at LSU and went to the Final Four. So it was a great run. But I learned a lot about coaching at Texas A&M.
And then after that, you catch on for 5 years at Tennessee. I mean, you guys averaged 26 wins per year, went to the tournament each year. Earned the first number one ranking in school history, top 10 recruiting classes, the first Elite Eight, all that type of stuff. We'll get to the ending in a second there. But talk about your 5 years at Tennessee and how y'all caught lightning in a bottle and what that experience was like.
Well, you know, Coach Pearl, I mean, obviously, you know, he's a great, outstanding coach. And, again, different than Billy, though, you know, has his system and believes in it. You know, so it was pressure defense, full court. You know, it was run and gun. It was fast-paced basketball. And so, you know, it was a different look coming from A&M. But, you know, that's the thing. I think a lot – obviously, we always get caught up in the end. There were so many great things that happened during that time. You know, and you said, you know, a couple Sweet 16s, Elite Eight. You know, we won the SEC for the first time in 40 years. Mm-hmm. And we went 14-2. And listen, the SEC, this was the same time Florida won back-to-back national championships. You know, the SEC was really good. And so, and then, you know, just filling the building. Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, that was the thing. One of the many things I learned from Coach Pearl was just how he woke up every day and promoted and sold the program to the fans, to the state, you know, to anybody that would want to listen. Mm-hmm. You know, and I carried that with me to you know, to East Tennessee State was getting out in the community and being part of the community. And we led the league in attendance for the 5 years I was in Johnson City. But a lot of that had to do with obviously winning, but also just being out in the community and meeting people.
And then after the staff was let go in 2011, abruptly given whatever it was, during that time, you went to Northwest Florida State, 62-6 record, all this type of stuff. You had been a coach for a while, went back into being assistant coach. Now you're back to running your own program, getting through players and stuff. How has your voice changed at this point? And kind of what is it that you – how did you grow?
You know, I was very lucky. I mean, I know this is going to sound kind of crazy, but honestly, getting fired gave me the opportunity to go back and, be a head coach after coaching with Coach Pearl, after coaching with Billy Gillespie, after coaching with Porter Moser, who is now coaching the Final Four. I've worked for three Final Four coaches after coaching with Keith Richard and Dave Farrar. So I got to take all these things that I had learned and put them to use at Northwest Florida. And truth is, there's very little I do different here today at Wake than I really did at Northwest. It's just fine-tuned, mm-hmm. you know, and it's probably a little more detailed. But I thoroughly enjoyed – the opportunity to go back to Northwest Florida. The great thing about junior college is you're truly, truly helping kids. Mm-hmm. They need your help, and you help them. You help them turn their dreams into reality. And we had 22 kids, I think, go to Division I in the 2 years I was there. You know, it'd be like what, you know, Brewster or
sure.
you know, some really great prep school. I mean, it's the same thing. And Really true. I would have stayed there, mm-hmm. you know, but a great opportunity came, and financially, you know, with three kids, I wasn't at the point where I could probably stay there, but it was a great job, you know, and I loved it, but I got to really apply all the things that I had learned up to that point again, mm-hmm. being a head coach after, I think 22 or 24 years of being a coach.
So with those years at Northwest Florida State, and then the 2 years, subsequent years at Wichita State, you're combined 127-12 at this point overall over those years. Wins in the NCAA tournament, two top 15 finishes and all that kind of stuff. Coming off of what happened at Tennessee, were these 4 years, how big of a role did these 4 years play in just rejuvenating your fire in the career and in basketball?
Well, you know, Jimmy, when I got fired, you know, I have three kids. And, you know, we tell our kids, we tell our players all the time, if you get knocked down, you got to get back up, right? Mm-hmm. So I had to live my life that way. It was either get be bitter or get better, mm-hmm. you know, and I just decided to get better, you know, and I went going to Northwest Florida camp, as you said, it jump-started at 62-6, you know, didn't lose a home game in the 2 years we were there. We go to Wichita now, you know, I didn't realize – I mean, I knew they were coming off Final Four, but, you know, I really wasn't responsible for any of that. I mean, first year we went 35-1, you know, ranked number two in the country, losing Kentucky in the tournament. Following year we go 30-4. You know, we beat Indiana, we beat Kansas, you know, and then we – in the tournament. Then we lose to Notre Dame, and then I get these Tennessee State jobs. So, yeah, I mean, I had lost a lot of games – you know, and then we didn't lose a home game there. So I'd been 4 years in a row, you know, without losing a home game. And I think in the 5 years I was at East Tennessee State, I think we only lost 12, mm-hmm. something like that. So, you know, maybe 12 home losses in the last 9 years. But that has a lot to do with being having great players and then surrounding yourself with great coaches and then working for great coaches. And, you know, Coach Marshall was a Hall, you know, a Final Four coach.
Yeah.
A great teacher and mentor.
And you mentioned the coaches that you worked for and worked with, Porter Moser, Billy Gillespie, Bruce Pearl, Greg Marshall. They all have very distinct styles. They all have very distinct voices and you know, cultures. Mm-hmm. How did these guys help your voice, your philosophies and all that kind of stuff as a head coach? Because they're all different too.
Yeah, right. No, and this is what's scary for a young coach, right? And I'll go way back to my first year when I went to my first clinic, Nike clinic, okay? Mm-hmm. Morning, Iowa. Valvano, Carnesecca, Lute Olson, Gene Bartow, on and on and on, okay? And even on Sunday morning when usually, you know, like that's where I started out speaking, mm-hmm. you know, the young guy goes Sunday morning. The guy named John Calipari spoke from UMass, and they spelled his name, last name with a K instead of a C. You know what I mean? It was just one of those things like, that's Joby Hall, you know? Yeah. But what I did is I tried to write down everything, and I tried to go back and do it all. And I couldn't do any of it. You know, I was a jack of all trades and a master of none. Mm-hmm. So what I learned really simple early on was keep it simple, stupid. More is less is more. And so what I have done is take bits and pieces of all this experience, mm-hmm. and applied it just to me that fits me as a part. You got to know who you are. You know, and I think early on I did not. You know, I was a wild man on the sideline. I was – because I was told – I heard on the TV that you got to work the refs. You got to work the refs. That I found out real fast that don't work. You know, just all these things that you learn, you got to write them down, and then you got to see what fits. And that's all I've really done, mm-hmm. is taking bits and pieces from Billy, from Bruce, from Greg, you know, Porter, all these guys, Keith Reshaw, and just mold it into to my philosophy. And then I think your philosophy has to continue to grow, Jamie. This past year, Nick Nurse is one of my very, very best friends. And we talked a lot last summer about running five-out motion, mm-hmm. which I've never done. And so, but I knew it was the way the game was going. And so I studied it and learned it. And, I mean, we went 30-4 this past year running it. Now, we could have went 30-4 probably ran the flex. I don't know. We had good players. But I think we got to continue to learn and evolve as we get older.
And then after that run, East Tennessee State comes calling. What was it that drew you to that job and that opportunity?
Well, first of all, it was my only offer. You know, it only takes one, right?
Yeah, no doubt.
But no, spending the time I spent in Tennessee and understanding that Johnson City, Tennessee, the Tri-Cities, love basketball. Why did I know that? Well, I'd been up to the Arby's, you know, when I was at Tennessee in Bristol. And I knew Coach Bartow really well. And so I knew they had history. I knew they had tradition. I knew about Mr. Jennings in the 90s and Calvin Telfer and Greg Dennis, Timmy Smith. I knew all the names. I knew they liked basketball. And that's a rarity a lot of times in the South, you know, where our school really, truly just loves basketball. Mm-hmm. You know, it's usually a lot of times it's football, you know, especially in the South. Now, growing up in the Midwest, it wasn't always like that. But I knew that was a basketball city. And so that really made it attractive to me.
And then I have to ask, too, during your time there, how often did you go to Powell's?
I made my son get a job there. Jonathan, my youngest is six. He's a sophomore. He'll be a junior. So I had a job at McDonald's.
Yeah.
When I was in high school in Iowa City, Iowa. Uh-huh. In fact, I promise you this. I'm the only head coach in the ACC that has signed McDonald's All-Americans and worked at McDonald's. I can promise you that. my son's working at Powell's. I didn't go to Powell's a ton. I drove by it every day. Man. He obviously did. He'd bring it home, and then I'd eat his Frenchie fries or whatever they're called. But
you're better than me.
That's an institution in the Tri-Cities.
Right? No, every time I go through, I have to go out of my way to make it through a Powell's to go.
You're not going right to the. You're not going right to the front of the line either. There's
no. Oh no.
There's always a line. Yeah.
So 130-43. You had two solo titles. You would have made it, you know, this year as well. How do you grade your time? How do you feel that you did at East Tennessee State?
I'm very proud of what we did. And I say we, you know, everybody had their hands on it, Jamie. I had, you know, great players and great coaches. You know, Jason Shea, you know, he had his hands on it. Now he's the head coach. And, you know, I go back to Penny. Brian Collins is now head Division I coach at Tennessee State. Brooke Savage has been with me the whole time, and BJ Mackey, these guys, you know, Frank Davis, and Jeff Claypax, Matt Klein, all these guys helped me develop this program. But I'm very proud of what we accomplished, not only just on the court, but off the court. Mm-hmm. You know, we graduated every senior that we had. We did great things in the community. We had a very loyal following, and that was the most wins in a 5-year span in the history of of the program. And really, we were the only team, first team in the history of the SoCon to win 30 before the NCAA tournament. Mike Young did it last year, but that was in the tournament, and had a great, unbelievable team. And I think that's the other thing. I think we helped raise the profile of the SoCon. Mm-hmm. I think our success in Wes, you know, at Wes Miller and Bob Ritchie and Nico Medved, and, you know, Chattanooga was really good when I came in the league with Matt McCall. All these teams, you know, Mike Young, I mean, has raised, I think we all kind of raised the national perception of the league. I'm proud of that too, you know, and I'm sure, you know, that's going to continue. And I think Greg Gary, there's some really good young coaches coming in. I say young. Greg's probably got gray hair like I do, but, you know, getting a chance to do it. I'm proud of that too. But, probably couldn't have scripted it a whole lot better. You know, we won 30 games this year, and it was the most ever in the school history. And so it was a good way to end, except for the fact that, like you said, you know, we didn't get to play in the tournament.
Do you ever sit back? Obviously, you're on the – Do you ever sit back and play the what-if game?
A little bit, not much. I'm pretty good about not, but it's hard some nights not to sit there and go, you know, we had won 12 in a row, mm-hmm. you know, at that time. So it wasn't like, you know, sometimes you kind of limp to the finish line, right? You know, we didn't limp. We were rolling, and we had a lot of confidence. And we had a team that could play different. You know, we could play small, we could play big. You know, we had Jerome Rodriguez and Lucas Cassano, 7 foot. So, you know, listen, Jimmy, you know, it's all about matchups in the term. And, you know, depending on who we got matched up with, I do think that we had a really good chance to win a game or two in the tournament. And but we'll never know. And I feel bad for those seniors because they're never going to get a chance.
Yeah. And the timing of the Wake Forest opportunity was different, you know, and it happened very quickly. How have these last couple of weeks been for you?
I don't remember them. I don't know. No, you know, they've been fast paced. You know, just kind of like the process. You know, I'm home on a Sunday night and getting ready to watch the second round of the Jordan, you know, docu deal, and I've never seen it, and I haven't seen it since because the phone rang and it was Wake, and I talked to John Curry, who I had a great relationship with over the years because he was an associate AD and. Mm-hmm. My board administrator of Tennessee. And so we had a connection, and it started on Sunday night. Then Monday, there's a couple, you know, Zoom interviews. And then Tuesday, there's a Zoom interview with Chris Paul and Tim Duncan and the president. And, you know, I got a suit on, but I got bare feet. And I'm never going to interview any time again with a suit on and bare feet. And then John and I meet on a Tuesday and on Wednesday. We're working on a contract, and Thursday I'm signing the contract. So, you know, it just went fast. And then Friday I got a press conference, and I get on the press conference and just about every player on the team's in the portal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it's been fast and furious, and it's been sometimes exhilarating, a lot, sometimes frustrating. And I think frustrating things are that you just can't connect with anybody one-on-one, face-to-face. You know, it's Zoom or a phone call. And so you're trying to establish and build relationships in a kind of an impersonal manner. And that's just not who I am. And so it's been harder. It's made it harder. You know, and then recruiting to fill the roster, it's the same thing. You can't go watch a kid play. You can't go to his home. You can't go to his school. You know, and so everything's kind of done this way. And it is what it is. And so I feel like just really this week is kind of the first time maybe I didn't feel like my nose was all the way underneath the water.
Yeah.
Gurgling for air, you know, but, you know, it's starting to calm down a little bit.
And then the roster loses its top four scores from last season, but there is still talent in the cupboard. You know, you always say that you want to be longer and more athletic than everybody in the league. Well, guys like Isaiah Mucius, Ismail Musad, Odu Aguama, Jacoby Neath, they're just that. Obviously, you haven't been able to see them as we're in a pandemic right now and all that kind of stuff. But what are you excited about this roster coming back next season?
Well, I think, first of all, the fact that they want to be here. You know, and it never works, Jimmy, if you're trying to beg guys to do something they don't want to do. That's why I've always been very cautious of that in recruiting. You know, not begging or getting guys to come for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
It never works. Can't trick them. They got to want to be there. And so that I'm excited about Jacoby Neath at the, you know, big, like you said, long angular guard, you know, Ian DeBose and Jonah Antonio are grad transfer, but they got size. Isaiah Mucius is skilled, and he's got to work on his consistency on his jumper. Ishmael Musad, he can really shoot it. He's got to get stronger. You know, we got a couple other guys, like you said, Odie, Aguama, big, long, angular, can run, you know. Ingraham, he's been hurt, but, you know, maybe he can get back with this Achilles this year. There's a lot of good possibilities there. You know, we got to keep filling. I think we got a couple more at least. I've always liked tall guys that can shoot, you know, and being long and athletic, older, you know, and the grad transfers kind of help with that. And so, yeah, I'm excited. We just got to get them on the court, you know, and when we can do that, you know, I have a lot better feel, you know, for where we're at.
And you've made a lot of noise already, actually, in the recruiting trail. You know, you put out a lot of offers to kids and stuff in the 2021 class around the area. And then you've also, you know, signed up Jonah Antonio you brought in Davion Williamson yesterday, local guy, kept Ian DeBose and all that kind of stuff. What has been your approach to recruiting to this point so far?
Well, it's inside out. Mm-hmm. You know, it's got to be North Carolina first, or the Carolinas, period. Mm-hmm. There's too many good players here, and you know this. You know it better than anybody. There's too many good players. And so does that mean we're going to recruit every player? No. But we got to be in the mix with the guys that can do two things, play in the ACC and want to get a top 30 education. Okay, it's a lot of times when you tell guys it's books and basketball, a lot of times maybe just basketball, or sometimes it's just books. You get them both here, man. Mm-hmm. Books and basketball. And so there's so many good players in this state, in this region, that we have got to be in the mix. Now, does it mean we're going to get them all? No. But we're going to try our best. And one of the other disadvantages of this situation that we're in now is we can't get them on our campus. Mm-hmm. Because I believe once they get on campus with the parents, pretty good sell.
Yeah.
And we have an phenomenal facility here that Mitch Shaw, gave the money for, and it just opened in the fall. And I mean, it's an NBA practice facility, and it's every day I go down the hallway, I can't believe how nice it is, And so these are things that we have to sell. And I believe if kids have a legitimate, great offer closer to home, they're going to take it, mm-hmm. more often than not, because they want their family and their friends and everybody to see them play. I mean, and it's the ACC. It's not like it's some other, league. They're talking about historically the best league in the country with a network.
Yeah.
ACC network. And so too many good things not to be in the mix with the best players in the Carolinas.
And albeit a school of 4,000 to 5,000 people, Wake Forest has a pretty rich tradition in basketball. You got the likes of Chris Paul, Josh Howard, Tim Duncan, Ish Smith, Jeff T. The list goes on. How receptive and helpful have these guys been to the change and to you and what you got going?
They've been great. I've reached out to them, that whole list plus many more. Mm-hmm. You probably know Mike Muse.
Yeah.
Mike's here still on staff in charge of basketball alumni. So he's done an unbelievable job helping me connect, and there's more connection to do. Not a lot of programs in the country can list all the names of guys you just named.
Hall of Famers.
Darius Sungalia. We have got to build off of that, but those guys have been great. I even talked to Robert O'Kelly the other night, great shooter from Memphis that one of my former players, Dame Bradshaw, I went to high school with. So, yeah, we got James Johnson hit me up, Ish Smith, We just got to continue to keep those guys involved. Listen, Coach Kyle Perry says, he's the first to say this, at least what I heard him say it is, this is a player's program, not a coach's program. Okay, coaches come and go, but this is their program for the rest of their life. This is their alma mater, and we got to continue – to bring those guys back in the fold.
So kind of with the timing of all this thing and how the program was these last couple of years, it's in a downward spiral. They brought you in and things are looking up. You got energy to the program. You're taking your mask off, throwing it on the ground, and people all of a sudden really talking Wake Forest basketball. And it's awesome. What are your expectations for this team heading into next year?
We've got to run our own race. And I believe that only because – I didn't believe that at East Tennessee State because it's different. And so you got to win the league, okay? Now we're back to a BCS Power 5 league, right? You got to run your own race. Mm-hmm. And then you add up your wins at the end and you see if they're enough to get in the tournament. Mm-hmm. Last year in the tournament, this past March, right? What if we lose a Wofford and we're 29-5? Do we get in? Mm-hmm. I'd like to think so, but – but here that's not the same case. And so we have to run our own race. Ultimately, I want to, obviously the same thing I did there. I want to cut down some nets and I want to play meaningful games in March. Mm-hmm. And in the end, if you're in the ACC and you're in a program like this with this education, why can't you compete to go to the Final Four? Coach Marshall did it at Wichita State. Mm-hmm. Coach Porter Moser did it at Loyola. Everything is here to be successful. You're right. But you, first of all, you got to believe it, right? And I think that's the number one thing we got to get back to is when we put our jersey on is having some swag and some confidence about who we are. Mm-hmm. That comes with identity, and we'll have that. But then just believing that you deserve this opportunity and that you are champions and can be a champion. And it's a mindset. So those are the things initially that we'll work on, Jamie. And then, you know, in time, that's we want to compete for championships. And they have in the past, and there's no reason why we can't do it in the future.
You've mentioned before the amount of home court advantage you had at junior college at Wichita State and then East Tennessee State. How important is it for you to build that culture at Wake Forest?
Paramount. I mean, huge. It's got to be – this has got to be an impossible place to come play. Mm-hmm. How do you do that? I says marketing is great, but the best marketing tool is winning. And then playing a style of play that people enjoy watching, win or lose. Mm-hmm. That's our job. I mean, you can have baby races, T-shirt throw out, you know, contest, but it really comes down to winning. And once you do, once you hook them, and then you get them back, you know, and they're hungry here. They're real hungry. You know, there's a lot of tradition here, and they just – They want to believe. They want to have some hope. They want to spark. You know what I mean? And so that's the plan. You know, in every place I've ever been on the ground floor, Jamie, there's always that one win that hooks the fans. You know what I mean? That's that big time home win, and then they start believing, and here they come, and now it just builds and builds and builds. You know, and every place I've ever been, it's kind of been that way. You know, and that's the hope here is we, you know, keep getting better and then we hook them. And then we got them.
So the NCAA has said June 1 today, obviously, schools are allowed to start bringing people back on voluntary basis and stuff. Do y'all have a plan of attack as to how you're looking moving forward with stuff?
We do, but nothing yet that we could put into place. And I think because Carolina's, you know, been – we just kind of moved into phase two last week. I think it really depends on the state and the institution as far as who is essential, who – I mean, here's what we don't want to do. And I'm not disparaging anybody that's back now, but you don't want to go too fast either, you know, and not be prepared and not have your things lined up. And then all of a sudden you get something bad that happens and then it's done. You know what I mean? And so I think it's wise to be cautious. Do I want them back? Nobody wants them back more than I do. I've never met them. You know, but listen, Jamie, think about this. When I was all the way up till the end of my tenure at Tennessee, we never could work with our guys in the summer anyway. Uh-huh. I mean, that was 2011 when we could finally just start working with our guys in the summer. So it really hasn't been around that long. Uh-huh. It's really been, for the most part, guys did their own thing in the summer. And so I want them back. But I want to do it for the right reasons, and I want them to be safe, and I want to make sure we're cautious about how we're doing. Now, if we can do all that, I think you'll see that happen here down the road. And I know some schools have done it, and we're working on that right now.
And then lastly, kind of wrapping things up here, every coach wants their program to have an identity, and we touched on it a little bit earlier. Obviously, Billy Gillespie, Bruce Pearl, Greg Marshall, they all have identities to their program. What type of culture, what type of identity are you looking to install at Wake Forest?
Well, this is something you asked me this question earlier when I went back to Northwest Florida, the first thing I decided to do was have an identity because I couldn't tell you how many teams I'd scouted and played against. I didn't think they really knew who they were.
Yeah.
They were just kind of out there. And so my identity has evolved. Our identity really, really truthfully is the same as it was at Northwest Florida and East Tennessee State. And I think culture takes time. Identity is immediate. So, and this is how I look at it. If you watch us play and you don't know anything about basketball, at least you should know who we are. And these are the five things. Number one is we're going to play hard, smart together. Now, you know, we may not always play smart, but we're going to play hard and together. Number two is we're going to share the ball on offense. The ball is going to move side to side. Three, now, this is the only original thought I ever had. We're going to be gritty, grimy, tough together on defense, GGTT. We're going to be in the gaps, stripping and ripping, pressuring the ball, rebounding the ball, you know, and running. But just playing really tough man-to-man. And then the fourth thing is a little quirky, but I believe this. I learned this from Billy. You know, we're going to possess every 50-50 ball with two hands. And championships are won and lost on 50-50 balls. And the guys that go one-handed don't get them. And then the last thing is we're going to do what we're supposed to do when we're supposed to do it, on and off the court, which means on the court we execute. So if you walked into Joel next November and you came out of there, win or lose, you should be able to say, man, those guys played hard tonight, man. They really shared the ball. They were tough on defense. You know, they were on the floor for loose balls. They were grabbing the rebounds with two hands, and they executed their stuff. To me, if you can do that, you got a chance to win any game. It doesn't matter what you run. Doesn't matter what offense or defense you put in. You better know who you are. And so every day, that's how we approach every day in practice. Mm-hmm. Every day is that this is who we are. And if you're not doing this, then you don't have both feet in. Yeah. And that's how you hold your team accountable, in my opinion, is by having an identity and then making them play that way. And championship teams, in my opinion, practice and play to their identity every day. And so I think that's everything. I think that's for really any really great team, they know who they are.
Yeah. And then kind of wrapping things up here, Coach, is there anything that you want to say to Steve Forbes fans, Wake Forest fans, anything like that, anything you want to close with?
I don't want to scare him by taking that mask off. You know, I look like Bane from – if I had some of those hooks in my nose, I probably would listen, Jay, I'm just excited for the opportunity, man. I'm 55 years old. I've been in it 31 years. To have a chance to be a head coach in the ACC at an unbelievable institution like this is just a tremendous opportunity. And, you know, every day I wake up, you know, I'm going to fight hard for Wake. And I'm just really appreciative of the opportunity. I'm looking forward to getting out in the Carolinas and recruiting. And I know there's great coaches and great players, and we'll go a lot of places. But this area here has always produced, you know, tremendous players. And so I'm just looking forward to meeting people, and when we can get out to this new normal, hopefully that we're going to have here pretty soon.
Absolutely. Coach, thank you so much for taking some time. Very excited. Love what you did at East Tennessee. I can't wait to see what you do at Wake Forest.
Well, congrats to you on your new endeavors.
And, I appreciate that.
You know, we're here to support you. And, you know, you can keep Brooks and BJ in line and Randolph. That'll be good for you. Good luck. And we're here to help. And if we can do this again, let me know, okay?
Absolutely, Coach. Thank you so much.
All right, buddy. Thanks.
Absolutely. We'll see you.
Bye.
Bye. And there you have it, Wake Forest head coach Steve Forbes on the Absolute Basketball Podcast with Jamie Shaw. Great insight into his vision, great insight as to him as a coach, what built him, what molded him, and what he's looking to do with this Wake Forest program. Very excited for you guys to listen. Please, again, if you haven't already, go ahead and subscribe to this podcast. Please rate it 5 stars and leave the review as to what you enjoyed most about what Coach Forbes had to say and what Coach Forbes is doing. We appreciate that. That really helps us within the rankings of these podcasts and lets more people hear these coaches' stories and what they have to say and all that. But thank you guys again so much for tuning in. For Steve Forbes, I am Jamie Shaw on the Absolute Basketball Podcast. We will see you next time.